Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. We are back for a second podcast episode this week. We figured with roster addition going into the break, which is kind of what we talked about last time and how much they need the break, but most importantly, Devin Booker is now an all-star. We will get into that. I honestly thought our last episode was about Devin Booker getting snubbed, and then I realized the reserves were announced 2.5 weeks ago. I need sleep really bad. What's up? How are you doing?
It's Friday, lacking on sleep, it's fine.
I feel like the however many dedicated listeners we've had for these podcasts past couple of years, when we both die before we're 40, they're going to be like, yep. Because of how much we just talk about how much our
Friday
brains are rotting and how tired we are on Fridays and stuff, and they're going to be like, yep.
What they don't know is I'll do a full like reset of like 10-hour, 12-hour sleep over the weekend because I'm a responsible person, and then I'll just forget to sleep for a whole week, and then I'll do it all over again. That's how I work.
Is
that unhealthy?
I'm just working backwards by like sleeping until like noon or one or whatever.
I don't know if you sleep. Do you catch up ever?
Yeah, I catch up, but I catch up in more unhealthy ways than you do. By like sleeping like 5 to 1 and stuff.
Okay.
That's not good. You shouldn't do that. But I do, because I'm not smart and a stable human being.
You seem stable.
Speaking of stable human beings, those don't really exist around this team. That was not fair at all. I was just trying to do my transition thing that I always do when we talk about whatever we talk about in the open. Like that clean, original open to show our personality like they do on every radio show around here in the beginning. Find something to talk about before we talk about the first story of the day. The first story of the day for the Suns. See, I did it. The first story of the day for the Suns is Jonah Bolden is what we're going to talk about. And just more importantly, our expectations now with him in, and what I mean by that is they bring him in on a 10-day, and now I believe what I saw in the timeline is the rules of a 10-day are that you get 3 games, I believe. So if it goes over 10 days where you don't play 3 games or whatever, it's either 3 games or 10 days. So he'll get the 2 games they play. I believe it's Friday and Sunday.
Saturday.
Next week, Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
And they'll go from there. But basically, what has been going on? Frank Kaminsky has been out since early January. We're now at like the 6-week point for him being out, pretty much. Aaron Baines has been out just about that long, like not much longer. He's missed like a week and a half less, but he has been, it was just left hip soreness. They said he was going to be reevaluated in a week like Cam, and we got nothing. I asked Monty, because it's the type of thing where Monty especially is never a guy to say anything on injuries and just say like, yeah, he'll be back. Like when you ask certain coaches and managers or whatever about injuries, some will actually give you some insight. I think Torrey Lovello is really good about it and just saying what their progression stages are and everything. Not getting that from Monty, so it's kind of become a thing where if you're looking for, why aren't we asking for updates every practice? That's kind of why, because we don't get any. But it had been a while, and I asked, and I was like,
These
guys have been out a while. Like, is there any update on them? And he was just like, no, I have no update on their an evaluation. He basically said it like, there is no update on a further evaluation to determine when they come back, which sounds really bad.
Like, they haven't even bothered to check in on them. Yeah.
It sounds really bad in that way, but it also sounds bad in like a, are we not even like on the road back yet? I think they are, though, because Baines and Kaminsky have started shooting around pregame. They weren't really doing that before. Now, that could just be elementary stages, though, and I'm not really reading the steps of recovery correctly. And like, if they're out there for pregame, does that mean they're 20% there, 70% there, 80% there? I don't know. But the bottom line is, and something that we talked about a lot the past couple of weeks, especially with the big men, is that like, we just have not seen the cycle of events for this team with their big men rotation. Basically was the first game of the season, Ayton gets suspended, and then they kind of figure out that Baines needs to start, and he needs to start playing huge minutes. He plays huge minutes and plays extremely well. He gets hurt because he cannot handle huge minutes anymore, and or if he could ever. I don't really know. He never really did in his career. Kaminsky steps in. He's playing those minutes when, for his skill set, it is the absolute worst thing in the world. It's like there's like a meter for him where the higher his minutes per game goes, the more likely it becomes that he's going to suck in the game. And it's like, once you get past 25, it's like you're screwed. Like, I don't think there's a Kaminsky game where he plays more than 25 minutes and he's good.
It's like a bell curve of where you want to land
bell
in
curve.
The middle.
That's what I'm looking
for.
Is
that what that is?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. Again, Friday. No
were
idea.
Were those bell curves? I don't remember. It's
trying to remember Mr.
Calculus.
McLean's geometry class. So you went to calculus? I went to geometry. I don't think I took calculus. I was an idiot in high school. I was really stupid. Shocking to hear, I know.
Worse if I'm wrong about that. Anyway.
Regardless, so then Kaminsky comes in, and then Baines comes back, and it's like, okay, we're still going to play him quite a bit, but then he keeps getting hurt anyway, and then Kaminsky's playing, Diallo's coming in, and Diallo has these minutes where we're like, is he the second-best center on this team? And then you have stretches like he had where Jonah Bolden comes in immediately and takes his job, basically, and you're like, okay, yep,
yeah, no.
Check Diallo's Monty's, actually not that good.
Monty's anger is, yeah.
And it's just one of those things where Diallo does these things, like the game on Monday, I want to say, Booker just threw it to him. And he just dropped, he just either just couldn't catch it and went out of bounds or whatever, and he just kept making these huge mistakes where I think I tweeted 5 minutes into the Wednesday game against Warriors, I was like, I hope Jonah Bolden's ready, because the amount of mistakes Diallo was making when the Warriors kind of came back into the game early.
The Monday Lakers game, there were two drops by Diallo, I think, both from Booker, and
yeah.
I was like, I'm going to see if Booker ever passes it to him again. He did like once, but it was, he looked him off a couple times or just like, he's rolling. He's not even thinking about getting it to this guy.
But they were relying on Diallo too much. And then Ayton comes back. Baines is back, but then he's not even playing that well. And then Baines gets hurt again and Kaminsky's already hurt. So they just are back to Diallo behind Ayton. They have not had a fully functioning big rotation since the first game of the season. I guess you can count the time when Baines was in there and he was playing really well and Kaminsky wasn't playing a really weird role or whatever it was. But I think that really long-winded point is kind of a way of saying that with Jonah Bolden coming in, I think it was wise to do so and get him in there for a game or two. But it just kind of also speaks to maybe how they're not exactly looking to... they're not looking for Baines and Kaminsky to be back anytime soon, meaning in like the next week or two. I think that everyone will be back except Kaminsky, if I had to guess,
yeah.
A week from today, which is Friday when they play in Toronto. That's what I would guess. But we, and Dario is the other one where it's like his role was changing a couple weeks ago, so we never saw that fully functioning anyway. Mikel's now in there at the four, so that changes this rotation. And then Bolden comes in and he plays well on Wednesday, but I think it's just... we talked about so much with this team and Ayton specifically and maybe just player specifically that we, at least for me, I kind of like failed to kind of zoom out and realize that they just haven't had a good big rotation that's been solid for more than 5 or 6 games in a row, really.
I'm going to tell you that this reminds me from the Cardinals season. And so if you don't follow the Cardinals, I'll just recap this real quick. The Cardinals are not very good. They don't have a lot of talent. They pick up off waivers a guy named Dan Arnold with a couple games left. He impresses them enough within 1 week's of practice to get red zone package touches, and he ends up being like one of Kyler Murray's favorite targets when they're deep in the red zone like area in the last few games because he's good. And that's kind of what this Jonah Bolden thing is reminding me of, where it's, I know it's only one game, but you watch him move, just move, and you're like, oh.
It was kind of like that with Diallo, though, too. It's just, I think Bolden has less brain farts, at least in his first game. Well, Diallo would rim run, and you would be like, oh, rim runner, holy moly, look at that.
But what I'm saying is there's a chance for Bolden to become the second best big man on this team, like real big man, like even if the other guys happen to get healthy, possibly. Like that potential is maybe there. And that's not good, is what I'm trying to say. He played 26 minutes, and I know the bench was short, but he led the team in bench minutes in their last game, his only game that they played, a win over the Warriors. 6 points, 7 boards, 2 blocks, 1 steal, had 3 offensive rebounds. He can shoot the three. He actually even kind of tried to dribble up the court once and didn't turn it over. I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating this, but Like, he fits modern bigs better than any of the other guys on this roster. Maybe Frankie can make an argument. He swung the ball well. It didn't really look like he was trying to do too much. In fact, I thought he was trying not to look for his own shot.
Except when he would grab rebounds and dribble up the court.
Yeah. No turnovers, I'm looking.
Just want to make sure that it was like the first time he did it, I was like, oh my God, now it's just a different
Gambo
version of
Diallo. I think
Gambo
tweeted that. He's like, oh, he can kind of dribble a little bit. I was like, no, he can't. And then he did it. And I was like,
he wants to show people that he can dribble, I'll tell you that much.
He does want to show that, yeah.
But it was like, it was the first time he did it, he almost threw it at Oubre's toes, basically. And I was like, slow down. And then it was like, okay, take your two dribbles and give it to someone if that's what you want to do. I mean, I get it. Yeah, he played well. And I just don't really know. I'm not going to sit here, and I don't think we should sit here and talk about him much longer, honestly, because his role at the end of the day is going to be behind Baines. It's going to be behind Kaminsky. It's going to be behind even Dario playing some small ball five, in my opinion. But I think it's safe to say, like, he came in at least in a one-game sample size and played a whole lot better than Diallo ever did in his best game. Because Diallo, even in his games where he had 16, 18 points, whatever it was, he would make mistakes consistently. It's just you could not avoid mistakes with him no matter what. And that kind of tails back to looking at him in New Orleans and being like, okay, like super productive in low minutes. Like, why wasn't he playing more? And it's like, this is why he wasn't playing more and why he can't be a backup center in this league, because he just screws up all the time.
Bolden has 44 games from 2 years, or no, just last year with the Sixers. I mean, he's 24. If Saric and Baines are not re-signed, there's a guy, if you want, who's already kind of gotten this last, what, half season to kind of get to know his teammates. Who knows? Minimum contract guy, maybe in the future. It's good that they're... I was worried. I mean, everyone was kind of worried, like, okay, you waive Tyler Johnson. What are you going to do with that? And it's good that they're like, okay, we have to have a big guy. There's a reason for this, and there's some forward thinking there. As much as they don't want to screw up this roster, they're conscious of the reality, which is they need to search for back-end talent and hopefully get a few steals, look to fill roster spots in the future. And if he's the 10th man next year, that's fine.
Yeah, best case scenario, he just keeps playing this way, and now you got your backup center next year. It's that could happen. He's talented enough. I think some background on him, because one of the... If I were to rank like the top five teams, I'm like just aware of their day in and day out stuff outside of the Suns, and just following them to the degree where it's pretty clear what the narrative is around everyone and just like what the guy is. The Sixers are probably number one for me, just because when TJ got there and the process was so fascinating to me, I kind of latched onto them. Bolden basically can't hit threes. There's a running joke with his name is Mike Levin. I've mentioned the Right to Sturkey Sanchez podcast on here a couple of times. I tweet stuff at him every now and then. And then I think we've had a back and forth about Bolden before, where it's basically like you need like a cushion on the rim. That's why I sent this signing to him on Twitter. And he was like, I hope the rims there have cushions. He has a terrific looking jumper. It should go in every time. Just doesn't.
35% last year.
Was it 32?
It's 35.
35? Okay. Well,
is that better than Frank? Possibly.
Is it better than... Yeah, I mean, who knows? We'll see, I guess. But that is the overwhelming take on him, was that really athletic, can handle the ball a little bit, score off the dribble, whatever you want to put all of his skills into. The bottom line was that he couldn't take just one of those skills and turn it into something. But, I mean, if he's just halfway decent and a little bit of everything, like we kind of saw in the other game, and it's just aggressive and energetic like that and playing that role, I think he can figure something out. The Warriors game was the Warriors game. Book was having to do everything. Oubre was really bad in that game. I don't think the box score was fair to how bad he was, if I'm being honest, because he had six or seven times where he tried to dribble and either couldn't get by his man or didn't want to go to the rim, or he was settling for jumpers. He took 10 three-pointers in that game, and a lot of it was he took two dribbles ahead and then like backpedaled a bit. Book had to, the one possession, this will go in my catalog of remembering these possessions, like the one in Philly where it was the first time I saw them do the run and jump at him before the end of the half, where it was like last possession of the half. Brett Brown just sent two defenders at him and made him pass. The first time I saw someone do that. On this one, Javon Carter and Jonah Bolden run a pick and roll off of Bolden running the ball down the floor. Bolden gets a switch. He immediately goes to the corner. instead of posting up, which again, like the, attacking the mismatch, like I'm okay, whatever. Carter dribbles for 3 seconds with his big with a big guy on him. Booker standing there top of the key, just watching because like it's their time.
It's fascinating to watch the Javon Carter.
Carter passes it to Book. Book like doesn't even touch the ball. Basically, he immediately passes it back to Carter and is like, "No, like go." Carter dribbles for 3 more seconds, passes to Book. He's got like 9 seconds on the shot clock. He dribbles to the other side of the court. He's like, whatever. And those types of possessions are just, and Carter was actually pretty good in that game. I mean, there was one possession where he crossed his guy up and he did a step back, because I think that's the next move in his head he had where the lane was open. He was step backing on a ghost. And like I leaned back in my chair like 3 different times. It was a lot in that game for me, but he actually played pretty well. Like I can honestly say that, minus the frustrations and everything. But there's just such a line when DeAndre doesn't play that you have to get a certain amount. And the Warriors are the worst team in the league, and they almost beat them because Book just like didn't really have any help and started getting helped off a little bit more in that game. But I don't know. There wasn't really anything else to take away from that game. The Warriors suck.
Yeah.
It's going to be rough for them. Even when the guys come back, I just think it's going to be... I mean, Steph is...
maybe 40-win type team, but they're already
behind. I think they can get to like 45, and they'll be in the playoffs, but not going to be back to the way it was. That's for sure. Just the amount of help they don't have. But maybe they'll turn around Andrew Wiggins, Kevin.
Maybe Smiljic or whatever. I don't know how to say his name.
I was at that game when news trickled down that Damian Lillard was hurt. We were all talking about it. I have long said I was happy to see that on this podcast, you can go listen to it, where we talk about, boy, does Devin Booker need a break. I believe I said somewhere to the effect of, hope he turns his airplane mode on Thursday morning and just leaves for a couple of days somewhere. And then he, sure enough, the next day or 2 days later at shoot-around, he says, like, I'm just going to go off the grid for a bit. And then he refers to his off-the-grid destination again post-game. So, like, this is a thing he's been thinking about, like, just getting away from everyone, which I salute that and honestly wanted that for him. So all of that is kind of in our heads. And then Dame gets hurt. We're waiting to see an update on Dame. We don't even really get an update on Dame. It's just that he has a groin injury. And then it just turns into, oh, Dame not only bowed out of the All-Star game and the three-point contest, but he said someone should be under consideration like Booker. And it was like, oh, this is happening.
Yeah. It kind of took him to say, oh, yeah, Devin Booker's a guy. I hope someone like Devin Booker who deserves it gets in. I'm sure that's when it went from... yeah, I think you guys are in the same boat as us watching at home, where it's just like, maybe this is a thing too. Oh, this is, yep, okay. How was post game with that?
So I was there. Wild. Naturally, everyone is asking each other, do you think he's going to go? I was telling people that, does he want to go or will he go? Because, look, I'm not saying he has no reason to go, but I do honestly truly believe, and this is just me being around the guy enough to kind of get a feel for how he is, that I truly believe there was part of him that did not want to go and just say, y'all should have got me the first time, I need my time away from everything. He specifically like referenced, without saying, the Kobe situation again, is saying like, the league as a whole, I think we all need some time here to kind of relax a bit. And this thing is going to thrust him right back into that situation. They're going to have the patches on. There's going to be something for sure before the game. They're adding the 24 points at the end. Like, it's going to be very present at that game, as it should be. I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but I'm just saying that if you want to get away from that and just kind of reset your mind, that is not going to be the place to do it. So I thought part of that was there, and I was just telling people, like, I don't know, but I just think he wants to get away. And then I was like, I don't think he'll want to. And then Sarver said something interesting the next day, which was that Draymond Green told him he should go. And he didn't reference how that came up, but I'd like to believe it was something like it came up or whatever. And
I was wondering, because they had a talk that was caught on Fox Sports.
Oh,
Arizona.
It was? I didn't see it because I was there. So.
And they kind of chatted about it, and he like nodded. I mean, I'm not a lip reader. But I was like, I wonder if he's saying something to him. Like,
I wonder if Book either asked him or Draymond made sure to go out of his way to be like, look, I know like things have sucked lately and like you didn't get picked and you're mad, but you should go.
I know you, I mean, just from being around Book, you said it even before the Dame injury that, like, Book just needs to get away. And I think I brought it up, like, about Luka, and you're just like, no, he wouldn't. I think when you think about...
I think I have predicted in places I didn't think he would take it, so I was wrong on that. But I truly believe the mindset is there still.
I think that there's no way he couldn't not go, though.
No.
Because when you look at, one, Dame saying that publicly, and it's just... the NBA All-Star Game is not one where guys traditionally will just sit out for no reason. Like, if you have an injury, even if it's nagging, and when you get that support from Dame, if you get a guy like Draymond tell you, and there's also, to me, like, he's over the snubbing to some degree where he's just, it is what it is. But the opportunity for a guy like that competitive to go and still be pissed about it, and then if he wins MVP or something of the game, that's a good way to say you should have picked me in the first place.
It's just a perfect example of, like, when you're seeing red, and I'm not saying that he's seeing red, but it's just a perfect example of when you're angry or locked in on a certain mindset about something, and then variables change in the way that you didn't see them happening. Once you see the full picture, and I'm sure once he sat down, thought about it, and was like, I might not, like, they won't want to, like, if I say no, then they might not vote me as an all-star anymore.
Right.
This would look bad for me. This would look bad for the organization. There's a lot of ripple effects that I'm sure once he was able to sit down and think about it, if I'm right, which is just me speculating about, like, him maybe thinking about not going.
I think it is also plainly a feather in your cap to get that regardless of alternate status. That's your
Dragic
legend.
Got the injury replacement one like 2 years ago in Miami, and it's an all-star appearance. It doesn't even say injury replacement anywhere.
And
it just says all-star.
If Book, even if he's like, my body's hurt, I just need a mental break, I don't want to deal with all the media and the Kobe stuff emotionally. There is, like, if you believe, and I do believe, that he's a real genuine dude who cares about Suns fans, that's why I don't get upset about him leaving here. I'm sure he's thinking, fans would be disappointed if I got invited and I said no. Like, in Phoenix, he would be letting people down, I think. And I think a lot of people would understand why he would say no, but I think he would feel too bad about that because he cares. And then the other thing is, like, it is, and going back to the Cardinals, Kyler got alternate status, and that's obviously, quarterbacks don't go, especially if they're in the Super Bowl and stuff, but, like, his coaches were saying, we're going to push him to go. And I know he's younger as a dude in the NFL, but the whole weekend of spending time with guys like LeBron, he's on LeBron's team, getting to know them, watching their habits. I mean, the Kobe stuff, when you just learn about how guys interacted with Kobe at just all-star games, which you think, oh, it's just a party, or they show up and they dink around on a basketball court. Like, it sounds like people take things from it. So I think as a still young player, like, there's things he can take from being around LeBron. I think that's value.
Well, just how about, like, having a space where he can just, like, go to LeBron's locker and just talk to him about the Kobe thing for a couple of minutes? Like, how many people can he honestly talk to in his situation about the Kobe thing? Like, there's, with his, like, playing and idolizing him growing up, and just, like, in getting to the level in the game that he's at, there's, like, 10, 15 guys in the league that he can talk to about it, and to have, like, LeBron there, like, Harden is probably the same way.
I'm sure Monty probably told him, too, like, I think you should go because that's just spending a few minutes with those guys in the locker room.
Oh, yeah. And just practicing with them, and it's just... I think it's just... It you can look at it as a... learning from them and picking up their habits, which I believe is true. That stuff is right. But it's also, how about just, like, being around those guys and just being around them, just spending some, like, hey, how about you spend your weekend with 12 of the best basketball players on the planet just to be around them?
I mean, what if LeBron has a 2-minute interaction with him where he says, and they haven't had this before, where it's, I think this much of you, I think highly of you, you can be so much better. What do you think that does to Booker? Just as a confirmation that he's that good. Yeah. Like, I think that stuff is important.
He says, he said when the Dame thing came up, and he's always said this, and that was something I mentioned on the snub thing, is that he, it's all about respect for him, and then respect more so from his peers is what he mentioned. So if, like, Russ or CP3 just goes up and says, like, you should have gotten this anyway, like, that's going to matter a lot for him. Like, Dame saying that matters a lot to him. And, like, Dame coming out the Trailblazers post the next day where it was, like, Dame said, like, Book's, like, my favorite player to watch in the league. I try and watch a Suns game whenever I can. And for those of us who have been trying to watch, trying not to watch Suns games, like, wow, Dame must really love watching Book play then, if that's the case. Yeah, to kind of take you through the locker room, I guess, after. I head down and I go sit in the post-game, pre-game room, media room, where we talk to Monty. I go down there as soon as I believe that the game is over. There's a time or two where I've had to walk back to the tunnel and just watch it from the tunnel at the end just to make sure nothing really goofy or crazy happens. But I go down there as soon as possible so I can hook up all my stuff and just start, like, continue/start writing to kind of get a couple minutes head start. So I go down there. We're waiting for Monty, and Monty is the fastest of any of the head coaches we've covered there in terms of he gets there within, always within 10 minutes, maybe 15 if some nights, but all, honestly, it feels like 10 minutes max once the game's over, which is like he goes, he walks to the locker room, says his thing, and then comes to us immediately. Like, coaches will usually take a while. We're sitting there. It's taking a little bit, and then Book started talking in the hallway on the Fox Sports Arizona post game. So people start going out there to watch him. More people start going out there, and then it becomes a whole movement of the room being like, okay, like, if he's going to talk right now, no one knows exactly what's going on. In the back of my head, I'm just thinking, like, there's no way he's going to talk before Monty does, so I'm just going to stay here. Then it's just me and Catherine from AC Central just sitting there, and there were, like, 20, 30 people in the room, and now it's just us two sitting there. So then I ask people to let me know when the locker room is open, because you have to stand outside the locker room before it's actually open to the media postgame. The locker room opens up. I get texts. I run, my version of running, through the hallway to see if he's talking yet, because
Scoot.
My sole responsibility there, like, I am someone who covers the Phoenix Suns. You are someone who covers the Arizona Cardinals. If you were not to write a post-game recap, but you got the sound would be more important for you, and the sound is more important for me because we work for a radio station. So I offered Gina, who covers the team, I said, tradesies, I'll give you money. And but, like, the audio quality from hers isn't that good. So I was like, eh. So then I went in there, ran in there, saw Book wasn't there. And I was like, okay, I'll wait in the hallway. Monty comes out. I'll go to Monty and then run back in there to see when Book's there. So this is my whole 5-minute experience. People who are waiting for players after the game are looking at me like I'm a psycho. Monty comes. I see him out of the corner of my eye. I jog behind him, sit down. Catherine, bless her soul, was ready to do the whole thing by herself, even if she's not really been covering the team at all this year. She asked him a question or two. I ask him a question or two. He gets done. I jog back in the locker room, and Devin walks out of the shower as I walk in the room.
Masterclass.
That was my 4-minute. That was like my 3-minute story on the 15-minute. The 30 minutes I had after the game of trying to make sure we got everything, because the thing I didn't make clear there is everyone will always either wait outside the locker room right away, like Lindsey Smith does, because she has to get the players right away before they are done with the post game show on television. They have a time limit there. And then maybe like one reporter or whatever will wait for the locker room more, but it's always mostly everyone's waiting on money, and then we go to the locker room
anyway.
Which
is a separate room, yeah.
Which is so a separate room that's
off the
like
tunnel, yeah.
A 45-second walk basically from each side.
You just can't see what's going on in these places.
You can't, so you have to run through the hallways like a weirdo, like I did. But we get Book. I believe the first question from Dwayne was from Dwayne, and he asked something to the lines of, did you see the Dame thing? And then he said, it means a lot, da 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 da. But as far as that, as far as like the spot or whatever, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Gina straight up asks him, will you accept the invite if you get it? He says, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Couple other questions come up. Towards the end, Gina asks him, like, what are the next couple hours going to be like for you? And he was basically like, dude, I don't know. Like, I'm not trying to overthink this. Like, I got a flight Thursday morning to my off-the-grid destination, so we'll see. And then Gina asked him, like, but do you go off the grid if you're waiting on a phone call potentially? And then he was said that we'll cross a bridge when we get there kind of thing. And everyone laughed. And then I yelled across the room as he was walking away already, like, keep your phone on. That was my one sacrifice for Sun's Twitter in case he was thinking about turning his phone off. And I was like, don't turn your phone off, dog. They're not going to call Ja Morant. They're not that stupid. Everyone thinks they're that stupid, but
they're not that stupid.
They're not that stupid. So that was that whole thing. And then I wake up in the morning and see that Gambo is run with it. And we have the story up and everything that he's an all-star.
I was like, late that night, I was like, wonder what the timeline, and then I was awake. Wait, oh, that's only a few days away. They should probably call him tonight. Like, they had to turn around on that fast. That was, how many last-minute injuries have happened like that soon before an all-star game? Probably has not happened very often.
Probably more than we think, but maybe. Still, like, it's...
That was the last...
One of
last
the few...
gasp. Chance for him, and
yeah,
kind of crazy how that spun around there.
And then I still have a headache from it, how quickly we vaulted ourselves into the conversation me and you certainly aren't gonna have on this, which is like, what does this mean? The Suns are moving in the right direction.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not trying to say that stuff. I mean,
it's nice. Like, it, even for, would I have watched the All-Star game? Probably. Do I have more interest in it now because we cover the team? I'm sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm sure fans feel the same way. Like, would you have watched the All-Star game? Probably a lot of them wouldn't. Will you now? Yes.
Yeah, and I mean... I'm trying to figure out the way to say this. So Robert Sarver comes on Burns and Gambo that day. And look, he's coming on because he wants to. Okay. So he comes on and says a couple things, mainly that this validates that we're moving in the right direction, which, okay, was it then when he wasn't an all-star 24 hours ago? I don't really get that thinking. I think that it is a big deal for sure that the Suns have an all-star and this matters. And then he said some stuff where he was like, I think this like speaks well of our environment. I was like, okay. Don't tweet. Thoughts, Kevin?
I don't really have any more thoughts.
I mean, on just like the Sarver thing. The story as a whole, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer kid here. Like I always wind up being anyway.
No, it doesn't.
But I'm just saying, like, there's a line between this mattering and being a big deal and such, like, so happy for him as someone who's around him. And the most I've ever been affected by a player saying something was when I tweeted the what a depressing line from Devin Booker thing, where I could genuinely sense that he was like, God, I really hope that we're not done yet with, like, how this has kind of turned around a bit. He was basically saying, like, if we're going back to the same old crap that I've been dealing with the last 3 months of every other season, where we just lose 29 out of 33 or whatever the run was at the end of the Triano year, I could just really tell. So for him to just kind of get this moment, and I think that what I wrote about was watching the game on Sunday, everyone who's a Suns fan is going to be watching just to root for him, and there are going to be no thoughts in our head watching him play really well or doing whatever he's doing and just thinking like, oh man, like he's going to want to trade, or oh man, like how much longer do they have? Like that kind of thoughts. I just don't think they can, it allows us a little break, and that's very, very nice.
There was that stretch there where they were just playing awful and it was clear that they just didn't have enough bodies. And I think it was the same thing. That was when people, two bad losses in a row is when people are going to just start jumping ship and being like, oh, this is going down crash and burn again. They've improved from last year. That's all we can say as a whole. Sarver's coming on is kind of reflective of just how the fans are going to react to this one weekend. It's nice, but yeah, I mean, again, it ain't easy after the All-Star break, especially with those injuries. And we'll see if Monty can finish off the year. And that's kind of what the trend has been, regardless of what happens, they've always sputtered at the end. And so we have to see whether they can not do that and whether there's optimism on the last day of the season. Because right now it doesn't matter. It's nice to watch him in the All-Star game. It's a good honor for him. But
13-14. That's what we said. We wanted 14-14. They've already won one of the games now. So 13-14 in their last 27. Go 500 the rest of the way, basically, is what we wanted. And I think that's why the expectation is so high for us, because it's like you need to do the exact opposite of what you've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
You have failed to build at the end of the year. That's something we always mention with a young rebuilding team that they've had, is that, like, well, these games at the end of the year, they do matter because the young guys develop. It's like they can't develop if you're just getting blown out in non-competitive games. So if they compete and
it's empty. Josh Jackson did not get better.
He did not at all. No one except Devin got better at the end, the last 30 games of the season, every single year. Like, looking back, like, Mikal didn't get better. I don't.
He had one, though.
DeAndre kind of did, maybe a little bit, but not really.
Throughout the year, yeah.
Just a little. In the last, like, 20 games is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
When they were getting thrashed all the time. It's really important. I'm incredibly excited just for, I think the one thing that I hope that happens, and I hoped happened, why I was the most disappointed by the FIBA thing for me personally, I just think it was a really good opportunity for him to get more eyeballs on him that he deserves, which is, I wrote it, I truly believe that he's one of the league's next stars, and they just don't know it yet. He's a mid-range killer from the 90s, and no one seems to understand, like, what type of player he is exactly. It's like, this is...
Listening to the commentary and judging on Twitter from the national people watching the same guy, I think, yeah, that is a good point.
They see him as more of a playmaking combo guard. And it's like, I guess he's a playmaking combo guard. He's a really good playmaker. I tweeted out the stat like a couple days ago, but he's just a mid-range murderer. That's like, that's really what he is. He takes almost half his shots from the mid-range and converts them really, really well. And the stat that I looked at is 53% or higher on your twos, averaging 25 points per game or more. He'll only be the fifth guy to do that in at least two seasons ever. And the other guys are like, it's the type of, when you hear the names, you're like, yeah, Steph, James Harden, Gervin, MJ, those are the four, and then Booker's the fifth. And you just think, like, Gervin, the name, like, him and being in there and MJ being in there, it's like, yeah, you're talking about, like, some of the best scorers ever.
Watching him in an all-star format
guards to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watching him in an all-star format will be interesting, because he's not Westbrook, he's not KD, he's more, I don't know, not flashy in a way.
He's got elements of Kobe, but he's not Kobe.
Right.
Kobe was not, like, I didn't mention Kobe on there. He didn't make that list once. He was never too efficient.
He might be fun because just the one-on-one element too. Although the format, who knows what it'll look like. I don't know. I don't know what to expect, but I'm kind of excited because it was kind of blah.
Let's wrap that talk on that, which is the game. So for those of you who did not pay attention to the All-Star stuff because guy's not in it, understandable, they changed the structure, and I believe, if I have it correctly, and I'm trying to say this as quickly as I can, there are basically four games that are happening within one. Every quarter is a quote-unquote game. At the end of the third quarter, the scores from all three of those quote-unquote games, aka quarters, are added up just like they normally would be in a regular basketball game. But they are going to add the number 24 to the highest score. So if the score is 100-97, it is going to be first to 124 wins in the fourth quarter. There's going to be no time on the clock or anything. It's just going to say 124, 148, or 172, or whatever it is. Now, I think this is terrific. And I think it is going to be, people are not going to realize it until they watch it, how much fun it's going to be. I'm willing to say that, because the best part of the All-Star game has always been the last 5 minutes or 3 minutes when everyone starts trying to win the game. And the problem is that a lot of years the game gets away, or it's like too open-ended, and like they're like, everyone remembers like when MJ hit the shot of Vermaerian, like that's one of the best examples of a game that came down to the wire. Well, now what you're doing is, again, if the guys care, quote unquote, that the first, second, and third quarters count as a game, they get money. So is it money to charity or money to them?
Couldn't tell you.
It's money.
A lot of money.
It's a lot of money, too. I think it was like $100,000 or something for each guy. So if it's like a five, someone's up five with like 2 minutes left in the first quarter, it's like, now we're going to start. And I think that's going to happen four different times. And then I think the fourth quarter as a whole, like once that number goes up, think about the team that's losing. So the team that's losing, like maybe if, let's say in the regular All-Star game, there's 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter and a team is down six. They're still going to like lull along for a little bit. But if you're down six and you see that they're eight threes away from winning, eight possessions away, technically.
You have an exact, yeah.
You have an exact countdown where you're like, oh, and it's just like, I think they're going to, that whole fourth quarter, I think is just going to be locked in because the losing team is going to be like, at least I hope.
The only bad thing is, what if it's not close by that point?
That is the only, them not caring about the first and third quarters and then the fourth quarter not being close anyway would be if some team's up 26, then the other team has to score 50 points before the other team scores 24. That's where it could get kind of hairy and not great. It's a terrific experiment, though. I really approve of it. In things that don't really matter, I love when we get weird.
Yeah.
The baseball postseason matters, Kevin. So to get weird with that, it's like,
oh no, I don't want to go down.
Don't
that road.
Do that. But for the All-Star game, no, yeah,
I like.
Put
this.
Trampolines on the court. I don't care. Let's get weird.
Don't do that. You're gonna get them hurt. You can't
whatever.
Put trampoline. Sorry. Anyway.
For the fifth straight episode, we are going to end the podcast by talking about how much a college basketball coach sucks. I am going to take my turn. John Calipari was on our air. We thank him for his time. Greatly appreciated. Good to have you on Bickley and Murata, John. He was talking about Book, and one of the defining theme that came out of Booker was, from a Kentucky perspective, was like, we had no idea this kid could run pick and roll because he never ran pick and roll. And once you see him in pick and roll, you're like, oh my God, this kid's a... He's like, he can do almost everything.
Why didn't you have him in pick and rolls, John?
So Calipari wasn't asked that question, but he was basically, you could tell this is something that's been on his mind because he's probably heard the criticism because guys like that care about criticism for sure. And it was basically to the effect of, we couldn't run pick and roll with him as much as we wanted to because of the other guards on the team. One of the other guards on that team was Tyler Ulis, who we have seen in a Suns uniform run pick and roll. He can run pick and roll pretty fine, especially at that college level. Like, he could run it extremely well. The other guards were the Harrison twins, Andrew and Aaron, who were not good.
Cousins of Arizona Cardinals wide receiver Hakeem Butler, fun fact.
Really?
Yeah.
First cousins?
I don't know.
This took a turn. But anyway,
you just dropped his stock.
I mean, the Harrison brothers, I never got it when I watched them in Kentucky, and certainly in the NBA, it didn't last for them. But wow, I mean,
we've all made
you could have just run Book and Carl Anthony Towns pick and pops and pick and rolls forever. And Cat, by the way, only played like 20 minutes a game on that team because he had to feed his other guys like Willie Cauley-Stein. College basketball,
college basketball.
Wait. I cannot wait. We're a month and a half away from me not having to watch college basketball anymore because I still have to watch Arizona State being in the office. Stanford turned the ball over five times in the first 3 minutes of the game. Kevin, it took them 6 minutes into the game to have more shot attempts than turnovers. Don't watch college basketball if you're listening. Just don't. You have a choice. I don't. Don't do it. All right, we'll be back next week. We'll talk about weird next week. Ideally, we podcast on Thursday because the Suns are going to... I don't remember this being a thing. I think I'm just haven't been around for them or whatever, but typically after the guys get back from the All-Star break, they will have a late practice at like 5:30 at night. So that's on Wednesday is what we are hearing or being told. So then we'll try and just go to that and then be back Thursday, I guess. I don't really know. I'm dreading that day. I'm going to be in traffic for 3 hours. Like, that is the worst possible way to go at that time of day. Not going to be fun for Cal. But we'll talk about how Book did in the All-Star game and the three-point contest, which we didn't even talk about just because he's been in it like 300 times. Is this his fourth time?
Third.
He won it.
I thought he went, then he won it, and then he hasn't been back, no?
He got third. He got third his first time there.
He won it.
And then remember the gif of him next to Quavo where he yells the F word? Isn't that when he lost?
I don't know, man.
Not when he got third, because Quavo... What is Quavo's career time? Okay, that's way too much work. Right, I think this is either his third or fourth time. We'll talk about
it. Do they have a four-pointer?
Dude,
is that this year?
I don't know. Probably the celebrity game again, which is on in 3 hours. And if you want to feel old, oh boy, watch that game and try and figure out who those people are.
Is Bow Wow like 50 now? He just catches up to us.
Is he in it?
I don't know. He was always
in it. Wow, 50-year-old Bow Wow. You're trying to get me to watch a celebrity game. That's how you do it. All right, everyone. We'll be back next week. Bye.